This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A recession doesn't have to be like 1929 or 2009. I'm David Brancaccio. A survey from the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG finds that more than 90% of CEOs think a recession is coming next year. A pause that refreshes, well, that's not the consensus of those bosses expecting recession. Only a third figure it will be mild. It's the In the Marketplace Morning Report podcast, that interview, if you miss it on the air. But let's consult now economist David Kelly, chief global strategist at JP Morgan Funds. Good morning.
We're not in recession right now, and I think for the moment we won't be in recession in the next few months, because we're still creating lots of jobs. But we may have a recession next year, but it should be mild. There's no excess in some key part of the economy. We're not buying too many cars or building too many houses or doing too much investment spending. So you don't have any of those cyclical sectors really overbuilt in a way that they would crash. So yes, we could have a recession, but it's probably going to be a much milder recession, a much milder recession than the last two mega recessions we had with the pandemic and the great financial crisis.
Now, I mentioned these CEOs thinking about recession, but I'll tell you, stock market investors seem to be happy about something over the last day and a half.
Inflation has been high over the summer, and everybody's very upset about it, but it is beginning to come down. And I think that the bond market is kind of sniffing this out, and I think that is probably giving some comfort to the stock market. So I do think the stocks are a lot cheaper right now. I think there's a little bit of bargain hunting going on.
David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist, JP Morgan Funds. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
The Supreme Court will now hear cases this term on whether social media companies can be held financially or otherwise liable when terrorists post on their platforms. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer out of our Washington Bureau has more. Nancy?
Well, David, one of these cases was brought by the family of a young American woman killed in terrorist attacks in Paris back in 2015. And the family is suing YouTube's parent company, Google. The second case involves the death of a Jordanian who was killed during a terrorist attack in Istanbul. And Google, Twitter, and Facebook were sued in that case.
What's at the center of these?
Well, the family in the Paris case points out the law in question here, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, it was enacted back in 1996, and Section 230 shields companies like Google from liability for material posted by their users. But that law was enacted back when the content on internet platforms was mostly chat rooms and bulletin boards, and now you have companies like YouTube actively recommending material to users. The lawsuit says Google should be liable for those recommendations. And the other case says social media platforms should have had more control over terrorist content on their sites.
How have the social media firms responded?
Well, they're arguing there's no direct link between their sites and these attacks. And Twitter has argued against any, quote, expansive conception of liability.
And if Google's and Facebook's of the world were to lose these cases?
Well, that would affect the shield of Section 230, so these platforms could be held liable for the content that users post on their sites.
Nancy, thank you. A month or two into the school year, depending on the district, and there have already been at least 10 school shootings in the U.S., according to the nonprofit Educators School Safety Network. And since August 1st, there have been 99 false reports of school shootings. That's about 40% more than in the entire 2018 school year. In cases where the false reports are not just mistaken but malicious, it's called swatting, a criminal act that comes with many costs, both financial and emotional. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has our story.
Back in 2012, one student was injured at a shooting at Perry Hall High School, northeast of Baltimore. The student recovered, but George Roberts, who was principal at the time, says the shooting put the whole school on alert.
Because we knew what it felt like, what it looked like, what it smelled like.
Afterwards, Roberts says there was an increase in the number of false reports of violence at his school and others, which he says often follows a real incident. These can take days for staff and police to investigate and are costly.
If you took kind of the hourly pay of staff, right, whether it be me as a principal or police officers and all the people, and kind of added that up, it could be probably anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars a day.
Having law enforcement race to respond does take up money and time, says former police officer Mo Kennedy. He leads the National Association of School Resource Officers. And Kennedy says, for everyone involved, the costs go way beyond the financial.
Even if they, you know, think it's real for 60 seconds, there's still a lot of trauma in that. And you just think about the impact on the mental health of everyone in that school building or on that campus.
This is a generation of students that's already dealing with the interruption of lockdown drills. On his campus, which is PS20, an elementary school in Brooklyn, fifth grader Leo Heilman says part of what's terrifying about a drill is not always knowing if it's real.
So I'm really nervous if, like, someone that's robbing is just gonna come in our door, in our class, and rob us of something.
His twin brother, Mac, says the fear that comes with that heightened sense of security sticks with him.
For, like, the next week, whenever I go to bed, I would think about it.
This emotional pressure can create a cycle of spending, says Amanda Klinger with the Educators School Safety Network.
Parents are upset. Parents want you to do something, right? When there's a tragedy, people are upset. They want you to do something. And so it's very hard to get out in front of that.
Especially when schools and law enforcement have to treat every report as if it's real. In New York, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Our producers are Meredith Gerritsen, Ariana Rosas, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, Erica Soderstrom, and Jared Dang. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.